Pod with Paddy and Andy.
If the opposition can't smell blood this year, we're as well pack it in, because even if Comerford's kickouts are as good as Cluxton's, every team is taking a step forward.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
All right, I'm delighted to be joined by Caitlin Thompson of Racquet Magazine, because we now know the makeup of the ladies' singles final at this year's Wimbledon. The top seed, Ashley Barty, reached her first Wimbledon final with a straight sets win over the former champion Angelique Kerber in the opening semi-final. And then Karolina Pliskova, former world number one, beat Arina Sabalenka over three sets, the second seed beaten 5-7, 6-4, 6-4. As I say, Caitlin Thompson of Racquet Magazine is with us. Good evening, Caitlin.
Hi, how's it going?
Very well. A bit more straightforward for Ashley Barty than it was for Pliskova.
Yeah, and you wouldn't have thought so going into it. I actually thought Sabalenka would have pulled that out over Pliskova, although they've had a couple of very tight matches. Kerber is great on grass, and she's had a great grass court season, and she also enjoys a good head-to-head against Barty. So I was a little surprised it was as straightforward as it was, but we had two good matches, and we should have a great match for the final in a few days.
Barty, who is also the world number one, so she hasn't dropped a set since the opening round, so it's coming together nicely.
Not bad. I mean, if you were to say that based on her first set of the tournament, in which she dropped to Carla Suarez Navarro, the beloved Spanish player, if she was going to be in the final, I think maybe some people would say, I don't know. You know, because Barty can be occasionally kind of spotty, but she's really, really backed it up. Obviously, she's a threat on all surfaces. She's won titles on all surfaces, and this is her first Wimbledon final. So it'll be really exciting to see her facing off against another former number one player, in Karolina Pliskova. So I'm very, very excited. A big contrast in styles coming up.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so it's interesting. Karolina Pliskova is a huge server. Her serve today against Arina Sabalenka was just absolutely stunning. She didn't face a break point with the exception of one double fault, which cost her the first set. But other than that, she was smooth sailing, firing off tons of aces at various times. She's enjoyed the moniker Ace Queen. And, you know, the real only question mark about Pliskova's game is sometimes her mobility is a little bit challenged. She's not always the quickest to the ball. She's quite tall, you know, and some of the movement required on grass has not necessarily been her sort of forte. She looked great today, though, moved really well, covered an incredible amount of court against Sabalenka, who I would have thought would have possessed a few more tools than Pliskova, who can kind of sometimes be one-dimensional. But that brings up Ash Barty, who has every tool in the book. I mean, she's got slice, she's got hands, she's got drop shots, she likes to come in, and she's got a ferocious forehand and a great first serve. She's quite small. She's 5'5". Pliskova is well over 6 feet. But it'll be an interesting contrast in seeing sort of the variety game of years past in the Barty form versus Karolina, who's just going to come out and hit the cover off the ball, as we say.
We've spoken a lot over the last couple of weeks when talking about the ladies' side at Wimbledon of the variety of winners of the Grand Slams. And listen, maybe we should just enjoy the variety of the winners. But there is a familiarity that comes with a dominance of the like of Serena Williams. And maybe we have this conversation every year, but like Ashley Barty as world number one, as top seed, as a former Grand Slam winner, is there the possibility that actually this going to Wimbledon and winning a Wimbledon could elevate her to another level where she could go on and have a period of dominance?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible. You know, it was interesting. Somebody during this morning here in New York was sort of saying to me that they thought now she surpassed Sam Stosur, who also has one title, but has not been in more than one Grand Slam final, with Ash Barty now making her second Grand Slam final appearance. Famously, she won the French Open 2 years ago. Now she has sort of ascended to the ranks of most sort of notable Australian women's tennis player. I think she was already there, and I think we're probably likely to see her, if I had to pick, lifting the trophy over Pliskova. They've had very, very tight matches in the past. Most of them have gone to three sets, or if not three sets, two very, very tight sets with a lot of tie breaks and only one break of serve. So I expect this match in the coming days will be very, very tight. But I also think because Barty's got a 5-2 record over Pliskova on every single surface, she's the slight favorite. But you never know. Pliskova can serve her way out of trouble and hit some huge balls that can go right past Barty. So, you know, that's why you play the match, because it's not done until it's done.
Incredible that it's over 40 years since Yvonne Goolagong won at Wimbledon, since we had the last Australian champion.
And what a fitting tribute. She's wearing a dress. A scalloped fila dress inspired by Yvonne Goolagong, another Indigenous woman from Australia, just as Ash Barty is, you know, representing the country and it's interesting to hear about the Australians who, by some accounts, care more about Wimbledon than they do their own home slam of the Australian Open, getting up in the middle of the night to watch the tournament, even though it's, you know, 2, 3, 4 in the morning. Mm-hmm. So I know that there's an entire continent rooting her on. And I think she's, you know, in terms of the imaginations of most tennis fans, she certainly enjoys more sort of popularity. I also think, kind of to your earlier question, one of the reasons I like women's tennis so much is dominance and perfection aren't very interesting. What I'm interested in is variety. We haven't seen Ash Barty win a Grand Slam on grass, and we haven't seen Pliskova win one at all, despite some chances. So I love the idea that we're going to have a new Wimbledon champion, whatever happens, and there's no predetermined narratives in the women's game. The fact that we got incredibly good matches today out of all four semifinalists, three of whom had won a slam, two of whom had won a slam, and two who had held the number two ranking and the number one ranking at various times, indicates that there's a ton of strength pretty much everywhere you look on the women's tour. And the matchups oftentimes are more important than the rankings, just because, you know, anybody can come out and have a great day against somebody else. So that's a really exciting thing for me to watch as we go into the finals.
Yeah. Dominance and perfection is what we've been seeing from Novak Djokovic this year and in recent years. And dominance and perfection is what we've seen from Roger Federer through the years. Is your sense that we've seen the last of Roger Federer at Wimbledon?
I mean, the truth of it is Roger Federer will get a wild card into any tournament, Wimbledon probably the fastest of all, until he takes his last breath. He's just such a crowd draw, crowd favorite. Obviously, he's won the title many times, you know, and he's still an entertaining player to watch who, despite not playing very much in the last 18 months, came out and made a quarter. That said, it did look tough for him out there. It was tough going, and I think, frankly, from the first match on, which it's debatable whether he would have pulled that match out against Mannarino had Mannarino not got down with a pretty serious looking leg injury there on the sort of precipice of the fifth set. But I didn't love the way Roger was competing. He was kind of negative out there. He was definitely looking rusty. You know, and I know in the hearts and minds of everybody, Roger Federer always deserves to be holding the trophy, but it was not to be. The play wasn't there. And, you know, if we're lucky enough to get him for another year, let's just enjoy it. But I think the expectations of the Roger of yesteryear, kind of like the expectations around Nadal of yesteryear at the French Open, you know, it's time to set those aside and try to grapple with who, if anyone, can stop the unbelievable freight train that is Novak Djokovic, because I'm not sure anybody can.
You don't get to the level of greatness that Federer got to without that insatiable desire to just win. Like, that is what all he was about. As much as there was a beauty to his performances, it was beautiful because he won as well. And that idea of him being around at 42, 43, I don't want to say as a freak show, because he would never be that, but because they would offer him the chance to continue to play, as a personality, it doesn't feel like it would really fit in with him. That while he may not go out at the very top now, like, this is a pretty opportune time to say, yes, I've given absolutely everything.
Totally. And, you know, I think, frankly, the world of tennis could use his leadership. There's a lot of talks about the future of the game, joining the tours, creating a meaningful union. You know, there's lots of things about the health of the sport that I think they could use a voice and a sort of unifying person like Federer to really good effect, kind of like a Billie Jean King, right? Like, there's plenty of opportunities for him off the court. And so I do wonder what's left for him on the court. You know, the one thing I will say is I think there's a lot of apt comparisons to be made here with Venus Williams. Obviously, she didn't win as many slams as Roger has, but she's playing well enough to entertain, to get into tournaments and have some exciting matches at the age of 41, which Roger will be, I think, next year. And, you know, the truth of it is, as Venus herself likes to say, you know, everybody tells you you want to retire at the top of the mountain, but they don't want to give you a chance to climb back down. Let's give these players whatever opportunity they wanted to step away. Because I think sometimes, and this is true of the generation of players I grew up watching, a lot of times I wonder what could Steffi Graf's career had been like had she not walked away. Gabriella Sabatini walked away at 25. I mean, Borg famously walked away, came back, but walked away again, still pretty early. You know, and a lot of these guys aren't very old, and you kind of wonder if legacy was a little bit more on their minds, they might have been able to accomplish a little bit more. That said, you know, it's up to them. And as long as they want to keep playing, I think the tournaments and the fans will turn out wild cards and support in droves. And so I'm here for all of it, good, bad, and the ugly.
There must be a bit of bewilderment with Federer as well, of how he's had such an incredibly successful career, yet still may not finish with the most grand slams of a male tennis player, that Nadal managed to get to 20, that Djokovic, in all likelihood by this Sunday, is going to get to 20.
It's hard to imagine anybody stops him. I think the only person in the men's side of the draw who can is Matteo Berrettini, but he's got to get through Denis Shapovalov first. I do think, you know, my perspective, and this is kind of the racket take on the world of tennis, greatness means a lot of different things, right? If you want to look at the people who won the most tournaments, period, it's Martina Navratilova by about a country mile. She won mixed doubles, she won doubles, she won single slams, and she competed well into her 40s. Is that the greatest of all time? Nobody's going to catch that record. Is Jimmy Connors' all-time match record going to be caught? Is Chris Evert's record on clay, which is better than Nadal's, something to measure greatness by? When I was growing up, Grand Slam count was interesting and important, but it wasn't really until Pete Sampras elevated it to the front of the discussion in trying to chase Rod Laver's 14 that people measured it as the be-all and end-all. And I think, frankly, as somebody who's loved watching all of these players compete, the truth in greatness is how they make you feel. And I think there is no doubt in my mind for the vast majority of people, maybe not even myself, but almost everybody who watches tennis, there's no doubt in anybody's mind that on the men's side, at least, Roger Federer is the greatest, whether that is accounted for in his Grand Slam trophy case or not. So that's sort of my very complicated answer to your question about GOATs. Because I think the truth is the GOATs, whoever we get excited about and who makes us feel. And Roger Federer makes a lot of people feel something amazing when they watch him play tennis.
Is there anything Novak Djokovic can do between now and the end of his career to change that?
I think Novak Djokovic has indicated that he wants to be a leader. There was this PTPA, non-players union, players association sort of idea that he was flirting with, notably didn't include any women last year and has been very sparing on the details of what that would mean. But tennis really could use some organizational bodies. You know, a lot of these gains that tennis has made in terms of the hearts and minds of the fans, in terms of competing with other sports, in terms of sort of mind share, and some of the problems of the sport, the fact that it's very fractured, the fact that a lot of these agencies and governing bodies compete with each other, the fact that there's not a domestic violence policy like there is in a lot of other sports, the fact that pay equity still isn't a thing. There are many, many opportunities that I think Novak Djokovic has to fix some of the organizing principles of the sport and really make it the popular, amazing, democratic, all ages enjoyable activity that I think a lot of people have rediscovered at a recreational level in the past year during the pandemic that the sport could take and run with. And I don't know that on the court, anybody can stop him getting the most Grand Slam trophies. But I think more importantly, if he decides to put his money where his mouth is and be a leader, I think that will honestly give him more of a chance of being beloved among the fans of the sport than however many trophies he lifts over his head at the end of the day.
Naomi Osaka is going to be back in the court at the Olympics in just a few weeks' time. She's called for privacy and empathy from the press when she returns to action, saying that she never wants her personal medical history to be scrutinized. Again, this, of course, after she withdrew from the French Open, initially saying she wouldn't do press conferences because of her mental health issues. Do you think she will get that? Has tennis had an introspection since the French Open?
I certainly hope so. I mean, one of the great things that's happened is in the aftermath of this dust up, which, to be clear, I don't know that Naomi intended to create essentially a warning shot across the bow of the tennis media. They certainly took it that way. But, you know, having dealt with her a little bit and worked with her at racket, I can tell you that she's sort of a courteous, thoughtful person. So I read that note as like, hey, just a heads up. A lot of people duck press. Novak Djokovic famously duck press after he hit a lineswoman in the throat last year at the US Open. The Williams sisters themselves have walked away from press. There's a fine structure in place to sort of account for that or punish that. And she was just kind of giving people a heads up ahead of time that part of her press duties, and to be clear, that's one part of them. It's also TV appearances and going up to the desk and talking to broadcast networks and on-court interviews and all this other stuff she was saying she was happy to do. It was just the press conferences she found particularly onerous. So in the aftermath of that, what I am looking for and what I'm hoping to see, and I've seen a little bit of at least soul searching, with all the outside attention that people have been paying to tennis in the past couple of weeks, I'm really hoping that the world of tennis can start to think about how its media apparatus can be modernized. Because the truth is, it's pretty far behind most other sports. There are very, very ossified voices in those rooms. The credentialing process is fundamentally broken. A lot of younger and newer outlets are not allowed access into those tournaments. The ones who, in my mind, have much more cultural, political, and social context for understanding an athlete, particularly one like Naomi, who spans nations and is very outspoken in terms of her activism. That's a very modern player, and she's talking to a lot of very not modern, mostly men, in these press rooms that have been there for decades or still in their minds writing for a print daily newspaper, which might or might not even exist anymore. Mm. And so for me, what I'm really looking for is not that she ducks press. Press is a vital part of any sports conversation. It's storytelling, as you guys well know. It's important to dig into, to show the good, the bad, and the ugly, and to basically bring people into it so they can understand it and enjoy it with context. Press will always be a very incredibly important function of sports. But I do think it's overdue to have this conversation about what it can be doing better. And tennis, unlike most other sports, has modernized more. And what I really am excited by is that those conversations are starting to happen within the sport. Who gets into these tournaments? Who gets to ask questions? Are these questions actually valid? Are the people who cover this sport knowledgeable about the sport of the athletes? And so on and so forth. And so that's something that at Racquet we've been beating the drum about basically since we started, because we found the tennis media landscape so wanting that it's really encouraging to see through this kind of seismic event, again, whether intentional or not, that we now have the chance to really have the conversation out in the open. And I hope, you know, it gets better, because it can.
Caitlin, thanks for that. Enjoy the next few days.